This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, from the Edgewood Resort in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. The big airlines keep getting bigger, and some might argue they've become an oligopoly. I'll sit down with Maverick CEO David Neeleman. You might remember he's the founder of JetBlue, and most recently a new airline called Breeze. We'll get his take on the airline world, good, bad, and ugly. Then a look at responsible travel. Edgewood is a member of something called Beyond Green Hotels. It's an aptly named group of hotels that go beyond just canned mission statements when it comes to the environment and sustainability. I'll talk with historian Joe Lordeau about the hotel on the lake, and then a deeper immersion in conversation with Amy Berry. She's the CEO of the Tahoe Fund, about the critical need for destination stewardship, what they're doing to preserve the lake, and how other communities around the country can follow suit. First up, from Breeze, David Neeleman.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.
David Neilman, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be with you.
You know, call it timing, call it luck. You've seemed to have the ability to figure out the right time and the right place to start an airline every time you've done it. When you started JetBlue, you realized what were the underutilized airports, JFK, Long Beach in California. You picked up all the slots you needed. Next thing you know, you were one-on-one, mano-a-mano with the major airlines, and you were doing great. And you figured out a way to finance the planes, how to leverage everything. And the next thing, and I will tell you this, you'll get a kick out of this. I realized that it was 23 years ago that you and I sat on that very first plane and did a live spot before you took off on the very first flight on JetBlue from Kennedy. Last night, I'm on a flight from New Orleans to LaGuardia. It was that plane.
Oh, really?
It was 23 years old.
Yeah, it's 503, isn't it?
It's still
in the fleet.
It's,
I've flown on that recently. It's amazing, the technology on an airplane. That think of what you're doing 23 years ago. That plane's been flying.
I don't want to know.
It's crazy.
But JetBlue is a success. Azul in Brazil. And now, of course, Breeze. We live in a world where there's been great consolidation of the majors. There's no more Northwest, no more Continental, no more US Air. It's really American, United, Delta, and Southwest as the big players on the block. I have to ask the devil's advocate question, which I know you have an answer for. Why Breeze and why now?
Well, you know, the reason why I've been successful is that I've never forced the issue. I never start an airline just because I want to do an airline. There has to be an opportunity. So as I looked, Azul was a tremendous success, and it's probably the most important thing I've ever done for a country.
Explain Azul.
Azul is, you know, when I got to Brazil and you know, I was really upset about leaving JetBlue. I thought that, you know, it wasn't justified. It wasn't just. And, you know, to take me out of the position of CEO and make me chairman. And so I just got bored and left. Because I was born in Brazil. My dad was a journalist down there, and I had served a mission down there. I spoke Portuguese. And I had always wanted to go back to Brazil and kind of make a difference. And so as I got down there and looked, there were 47 million people. It was a country of 200 million people with 47 million travelers. The U.S. at that time had 300 plus and 650 million travelers. So, you know, there were a lot of people that couldn't travel in Brazil. And if you ordered something online, it took you 2 weeks to get it. So I thought there was an amazing ability to kind of start an airline, to fly to a bunch of cities that nobody was flying to, which turned into a logistics company as well. Today, indirectly, we probably employ 50,000 people down there. We fly 30 million people a year. We deliver 35 million packages a year. And so I think it's done more for Brazil. You know, now there's over 100 million people traveling in Brazil. It's more than doubled since we've come around, and we've about half, you know, more than half of all that we took. So it was just my life's work. It was something that I'm really proud of. And so as I was down there looking back to the U.S., I thought, wow, you know, there's an interesting trend developing here. Airlines are getting bigger and bigger airplanes because their costs are going up and up and up. You know, this is kind of post-bankruptcy of all the big guys. And the regional airlines are locked in at a certain seat size, between 50 and 74 seats.
So they can't grow.
They can't get bigger airplanes because of the scope clauses, the union clauses. Yeah, the union clauses.
Because after you get beyond a certain number of seats, a mainline pilot has to fly it.
Yeah. So what people don't realize is in 2010, there was almost a million regional flights a year, and this year there'll be 550,000. So we've lost 450,000 flights in the regional side, and they weren't really that economical of an airplane anyway, so you had, because they were artificially sized. You know, and then with the kind of doubling of pilot salaries at the regional airlines, plus then the 50-seaters are going away. So there was just a really big opportunity to fly in these small and medium-sized cities.
Somebody once told me that those regional jets couldn't even make a profit unless they were like 90% full.
They couldn't make a profit unless they had business traffic on it.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't be selling $30 and $49 and $59 fares. You had to get the $800 fares, the $700 fares to be able to make them work. They couldn't work on a low fare basis. And so as the airlines kind of focused more and more on hubs and then even took out more and more of the spokes, and, you know, if you add up all the cities that airlines have pulled out of, the it's probably 50, 60 cities.
It's actually more than that now. We've talked about it on the show. I mean, if you live in Toledo, Ohio right now, you have a problem
because American, United, and Delta don't fly there anymore.
Yeah.
So if you live there, how do you get in? How do you get out? If you have a business there, how do you attract business? And nobody's stepping up to the plate to fill that void. So if you're in Toledo, you're driving to Detroit.
Yes. Yeah, and that's a lot of that going on. I mean, Huntsville, Alabama does have regional service from the big three, but they're principally to the hubs. And if you want to go direct, nonstop, you have to drive to Nashville, and that's a two-hour drive. So, you know, if you look at all these little pockets of pain around, and then you have a plane that's smaller, and Legion has done a great job proving that they can, with a bigger airplane, they can serve a lot of markets, but we have even a smaller plane with a lower trip cost. We're kind of in the sweet spot because we have 137 seats on our 220s.
That's your A220s?
Yeah. But they have 12 first-class seats on them, and they have 42 extra legroom seats, and they don't have just one middle seat per row. And so people love flying on the bigger windows. People love flying on that airplane. And so by hitting that sweet spot, there's just a lot of markets that we can serve that others can't.
And you can serve them nonstop.
Yeah, nonstop. And, you know, we started with, we're going to get you there twice as fast for half the price. That was kind of our mantra. And, you know, obviously.
Is it still true?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, obviously fuel is up, and so we got to raise our prices a little bit to help cover for that. But, you know, that's kind of the goal.
But if I take a look at your route network, you're not flying from JFK to Chicago. You're flying from Islip to Charlotte, or you're flying, right?
To Charleston.
To Charleston, yeah.
Islip Charleston, or Islip to Raleigh, or Islip to, you know, places where people want to go.
Norfolk. And by the way, I'm a huge fan of Islip Airport. I think it's totally underutilized. They've got all the runway space you need. They have all the gate space you need. And you have a population based on Long Island that doesn't want to go to Kennedy or LaGuardia.
Yeah, it makes it more challenging. You have more options out of those bigger airports. But, you know, they're talking about even building a terminal on the other side of the airport and having the Long Island Railroad go right through the terminal. So that'd be cool, too, because, you know, it's just a little bit far out for the massive amounts of people that, you know, live in Norfolk County to be able to get all the way out there. So, but our customers love it. They really love getting in and out and being able to, you know, go for less.
I mean, what's your longest flight? Is it Providence to?
LAX.
So that you have a transcon.
Yeah, we had transcons this summer. Right? So what we try and do is we go where people want to go at the time of year they want to fly. So we pivot more east-west in the summertime because a lot of people want to go to Providence in the summertime. They want to go to Portland, Maine. They want to eat those lobsters. And then we flip the schedule around, and then everyone in Portland or Providence wants to go to Florida during the winter months. So we do more Florida. You know, maybe 50% of our routes are Florida-based in the wintertime. And then in the summertime, it flips around, and we do more east-west.
Other than the intangible of fuel and labor, what's your biggest challenge?
Fuel.
I said other than fuel.
No, it's just, you know, making sure that we have an operation that runs smooth, and our team's done a tremendous job of continuing to improve. You know, our NPS scores are at all-time high. Our net promoter score, which is something we track with our customer satisfaction. Making sure that we go on time, we're all-time high in on-time percentage, almost 80% this month, that we never cancel a flight. That's really that's our mantra. You know, even if
that was your mantra when you were JetBlue.
Yeah, even if we delay the flight, but it was harder at JetBlue because, you know, then you have air traffic and thunderstorms wipe out everything. That makes it a lot harder. But in the cities we fly, we can do that. We can say, look, we can't go tonight, but we're going to go in the morning or if needs be. That's very rare.
What would you say is the most surprising city pair route that you fly?
Oh, there's a lot of them. You know, I mean, if you look in that Mid-Atlantic region, you know, anything out of Charleston or Richmond or, a lot of those cities, those are spectacular.
Airline fares are near historic highs in the year 2023. Hotel rates as well. Everybody talks about, you know, pent-up demand. Everybody talks about revenge travel. What do you see as a radical change in passenger behavior that's allowing this to be sustained?
Well, I think if you just remove us from the equation for a second, because we try to fly where people aren't. And that's really important. But if you look kind of the landscape that's going on out there, I think that the, you know, the big four plus, you know, the ULCCs, you know, the Spirit and Frontiers of the world. And I think Allegiant's more in our category because they fly mainly where people aren't. But there's a bit of a, there's a tussle going on right now. The big airlines added something between 15 and 20% of capacity in one quarter, which is not traditionally the best quarter of the year, which is the fourth quarter. And I think the revenue pretty much stays at a certain level to a great degree. So if you add 20% of capacity and you have all that additional cost to fly this 20%, you got to fill those seats. The only thing you can do, unless there's a pickup of 20% of demand, is you have to lower fares to try and stimulate traffic.
And is, so you're seeing, is that starting to happen now?
Yeah, fares are, in the fourth quarter, have dropped, you know, precipitously.
Yeah, the last time I looked, they were about 26% less than they were about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, they're really on the downhill slide. Now, you add to that, I was looking at one of the majors' fuel burn consumption for the year is 4 billion gallons. So fuel's gone up a buck a gallon in the last 90 days. And that's why airline stocks are down 30 to 40%, because there's, no matter what the airlines are saying, there's a lot of really smart people that are in the market doing the math and saying, these guys aren't going to make money, because you can't add $1 billion of cost in the quarter, have your airfares go down 26%.
It doesn't match.
The match, the, no. You know, the, it just, well, doesn't.
It's the famous Richard Branson quote that if you want to be a millionaire, you start with $1 billion, open an airline, you'll become a millionaire.
I think Warren Buffett said that, and he just stole it from Warren Buffett. He tried to invest in airlines, and he figured out that wasn't the great idea.
So where do we go from here now?
I think you'll just see an adjustment in capacity. I mean, there's a lot of old airplanes that people are holding on to, and I think you'll probably see some early retirements. I know Spirit, for example, has a bunch of 319s that they'll get rid of. Everybody has, you know, older, smaller planes that they would retire, and you know, I think that probably bodes well for the pilot market as well, because, you know, I think it's kind of at its maximum that it can take today, especially with the economy the way it's at. I think people have spent a lot of money. You know, they had some extra money from coming out of COVID, and there was revenge, or there was pent-up demand travel. But, you know, now you've purchased all your stuff, and you've started paying your student loan payments again. You got to make your mortgage payments again. And so, you know, I think there is a limit to what people will be willing to spend. And that's, we're in a good position because you know, people will look for the lowest fare, and they'll look for the most convenient, and they're not just going to flip, you know, whatever dollar it is. And maybe there may be some spending that's motivated by mileage as opposed, and then you're saying, wait a second, I'm going to get this mileage, but I just spent all this extra money for it. And then when I go to redeem the miles, it's going to cost me so much to do it. This whole thing doesn't make sense anymore. I'd rather just go nonstop and do it for a better fare.
Are the frequent flyer programs fatally flawed now?
I think you've got four airlines that have a lot of power, and they're kind of pushing the limits of it a little bit. And I think, you know, consumers are not stupid, and they'll figure things out.
Well, at a certain point, we actually can do the math.
You can do the math, but they also have their research departments, and they can, you know, they're really sophisticated at looking at customers. I think there'll probably be some pullback, and you'll see some, the pendulum, I think, could potentially start swinging the other way.
So what you're saying is airlines like Delta may have gone too far?
Well, you know, I just can't, when I look at the qualifications for what you have to do and to get the low tier. Yeah, to get the low tier and how much you have to spend. And
let me ask you a question as a passenger. Mm-hmm. Would you spend $75,000 to get the lowest tier status at Delta?
it's a lot of money. But, you know, I guess if there's less people doing it, then you compete with less people for the upgrades. I don't know. I got a tremendous amount of respect for Delta. They run a tremendous airline. It looks a lot like JetBlue, actually, with the live TVs and the free internet. And
yeah,
you
were first.
But they're looking at the number of customers, they're looking at the number of cancellations on their credit card, and they'll, I'm sure that if it's really affecting them, they'll make an adjustment.
I mean, the attitude is there are only four major airlines. You got to fly one of them, and they probably ran the numbers to think even if you have drop off and people canceling the card or are leaving their frequent flyer program, they're still going to fly the airline.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting dynamic for sure.
You're not big on the frequent flyer programs?
You know, our frequent flyer program, we have one, and it basically gives you points for every time you fly.
But you have one because everybody else has one.
We do, but it also is a way of, you can't fly on us without you filling out a form and giving us either your cell phone or your email address. That's valuable for us because we can talk to all of our customers. We have, you know, almost 3 million people in our database now that we can talk to. And particularly if a flight's late or whatever, we can send them an email and advise them. And you're just more connected to your customers.
My thanks to David. Now, if you're looking to stay at a hotel that goes beyond just asking permission not to wash your towels every day, the Edgewood Resort is a pretty good candidate. But before you understand their sustainability commitment, a bit of history with Joe Lordeau.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Joe Lordeau, how are you, Joe?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
So how far back does your history go?
Our history goes back to 1863, is when our family first arrived. But obviously, we were not the first people here.
But wait a minute. You first arrived from where?
From where? Great question. Scotland to Canada to Nauvoo to Council Bluffs to Carson City by foot. Of course, not across the Atlantic. That was a long journey via boat.
But everything else was by foot?
By foot.
So you received no mileage for that?
No, there were no airline miles then. There was just a lot of worn-out souls.
By the way, there are no airline miles now. They just think you have them. But that's another story. So when they got here, obviously they were now confronted with all the history that preceded them.
Oh, boy. By the time we had arrived, we were not the first ones here. Obviously, both the Washoe tribe and the Paiute tribe had predated us. And settlement had occurred before we arrived as well. Fun fact, you are aware, I'm sure, this is the staging ground of the original Pony Express came through here.
Tell me more.
I will happily tell you more. One of the last surviving Pony Express stops in the state of Nevada is just across the street. And wow. A gentleman named Hank Monk took off from there and survived what became known as the longest Pony Express ride.
How long was it?
It was 90 miles.
One way. When did the Pony Express start?
Oh boy, 1863 and done by 1864? No, it might have been 1861 to 63.
So it wasn't that long?
No, it lasted less than a year, 18 months maybe.
And they're still waiting for that letter to be delivered, you know? Just a thought.
Well, that's what you get when you only paid a couple cents for the stamp.
I know. They should have had the forever stamps back then. So you had the Pony Express here.
Mm-hmm.
But wasn't really the Wild Wild West, or was it?
You know, well, the longest ride was a consequence of the Paiute Indian Wars. The other stations had been burned down, so Hank had to keep riding. But different relationships, obviously. The Washoe were here as well. Very peaceful tribe.
And we're right now in Washoe County, right? I
mean, yes. So
there's history right there.
Mm-hmm.
When people come here for the first time, when you were here, what's the first thing that surprised you about this area?
Boy, I've been coming here since I was, you know, an infant, so I don't know that I have so much as a first memory, but just a collection of memories as a kid.
Because when you think about it, this was farmland. People were farming here.
Oh, yeah. The This was not the best farmland. The best farmland was down in Carson Valley. Up here you would see more dairy farms, some grazing land.
So what were you doing as a kid here?
As a kid?
Yeah.
Having some of the best summers ever.
Okay, so tell me some of your secrets about those summers, meaning you've got the lake to play in, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have the best natural playground you could imagine, right?
Oh, boy. The best backyard you could ever imagine. You've got trees, mountains, rocks to climb on, rivers to play in, a lake, some of the best views if you're willing to climb and get up high and get up on top of rocks.
And you did that?
Every kid should. I've got the skin knees to prove it.
But what's changed since then? Because I still look out and see the lake. I still see the rocks and the mountains.
More people. In a good way. This land has always been precious to us. It's my best family memories are here. When we talk about this as our land, I say that in the sense of it belongs to my family. It belongs to my ancestors as much as it belongs to the grandkids I may one day get to have. And my job is to preserve it, grow it, pass it on with those same instructions.
Okay, so you've opened the door. How do you preserve it?
Great question. First one is being...
That's why I'm here, by the way. Great questions, yeah.
Being responsible in how we do things. We joke that, you know, we are a family business, and preserving this is very, very, very important to us. I'm thinking about it because I want to give you the best answer I can. It comes from originally being a ranching family. You have to live with the land. You don't live on it. You don't live from it. You live in synergy with it. And we have to take care of Lake Tahoe for it to take care of us. And by us, I mean the entire Edgewood family. What I think gives me great joy is seeing other people coming here and experiencing that as well, seeing that this place is amazing. We have the lake clarity because we take care of the lake. We have the trees because we've chosen not to cut them down.
And, of course, you have to educate the visitors.
We do our best. We have, I think the favorite story I like telling is our, the golf course is stunning. The water traps everyone complains about, especially some of the ponds people end up, you know, knocking shots into. What they don't realize is those are actually giant filtration ponds that we've planted natural vegetation there that slows down all the water. And we collect all the rainwater from the casino core, run it through a series of creeks and ponds, and we slow the water down and drop all the fine sediment. So it collects there instead of going into the lake. Take a wild guess how much sediment we pull out of those ponds every year.
Tell me.
About 500,000 pounds.
Okay, I have the obvious questions coming. Where does it go?
It gets relocated. We've got other spots.
I know it gets relocated.
Yeah. We obviously don't dump in the lake. We haul it.
Where did the hostages go? They were relocated.
Yeah. Goes up over the hill, and then we have another area.
I love that. It goes over the hill. Where's the cell? It went over the hill. Obviously, is it a sediment hospice?
Settlement retirement home, a permanent retirement home where it doesn't get back into the lake.
But the good news is it's not draining into the lake.
No.
And how do you irrigate the golf course?
Water from Lake Tahoe. We have the Edgewood Water Company, where dates back to, couldn't actually give you the original start on that one, but we have water rights to Lake Tahoe, and we pull water out of the lake from about 3/4 mile deep. We actually use that water to cool the hotel.
By the way, when you say that in a very casual way, 3/4 mile deep, that's a deep lake.
Makes for cold water, about 42 degrees down there.
Right. And how many gallons of water in Lake Tahoe?
I have no idea.
I have the answer, but I'll tell my audience a little bit later. It's amazing the number. But, you know, if you drop a coin by accident in the lake, you are never going to get it back.
Well, it depends where you drop it.
Well, I'm not talking on the shore. I'm talking about if you go out there, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's deep. It's deep. What's, to this day, what's the biggest surprise for you about Lake Tahoe?
Biggest surprise about Lake Tahoe? You know, I think that there's a universal attachment to it. For me, it's easy to to love the lake. You know, I grew up knowing it. It's my kids play here. My dad played here. But seeing other families coming up here and having that same experience and knowing that it wasn't just rooted to us. I love seeing multi-generational families come up here and stay. I love seeing the grandparents with their kids and their grandkids, either at the fire pits with the s'mores or...
Yeah, you can't forget the s'mores.
Of course not. But seeing that there's something about the clean air, the clean water, the mountains, the trees that draws people here. And it isn't just work travel. It isn't just a quick vacation. It's I want to bring the whole family.
My thanks to Joe. Now, every time I come to Lake Tahoe, I check in with Amy Berry. She's the CEO of the Tahoe Fund. But I'm always interested in where they focus their attention to preserving and then maintaining the community, as well as the lake. To me, they're a role model for many other communities on not just putting their money where their mouths are, but in their commitment to the environment in a practical way. Amy Berry, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to see you again, Peter.
Yeah, we had a great time that day.
We did. We got to ride the trail before it even opened.
And now it's opened.
Yeah, it's been open now 4 years.
Wow.
Exceeding everybody's expectations.
And how long is the trail?
It's about 3 miles. It runs from Incline Village, so the northern end of the lake on the Nevada side, to Sand Harbor State Park. We anticipated about 100,000 people a year would ride the trail. Trail counters are showing almost 200,000 people.
And can it handle it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. So being here as long as you've been here, looking at all the challenges that are here, right? We talk about over-tourism. You just mentioned those numbers. How do you manage it?
I think one is recognizing it. You know, you have to recognize first that you have a problem before you can start to solve it. But we've been working with over 17 different partners, actually, on something we call the Destination Stewardship Plan. And that is really a recognition of Tahoe is more popular than it's ever been. It's just such a gorgeous place. You know, you've been here a few times.
Oh, yeah.
And people want to come, and we just need to be better prepared for when they visit.
And how do you do that?
So we just launched something in June called the Destination Stewardship Plan, and it is an action plan with 4 very specific goals and 31 different action items in it to help better manage people when they're here. So that's things like knowing what days are going to be peak demand days, having more microtransit, having more litter service.
I'll give you an example. If I'm going to visit one of the islands in the Caribbean, let's say St. Thomas, I don't just go in the on the website and make an airline reservation. I call one of the hotels there and say, tell me the days of the week that the cruise ships are not here. That's where I want to go.
Yeah, that's sort of the Tahoe experience. I've been using this term a lot lately, but you don't build church for Easter Sunday. We can't build Tahoe for every busy day of the year, but we can start to build better management and infrastructure around the days where we know it's busy. But definitely, I would recommend call ahead, find out when the busy days are, and try to come in the less busy days. The shoulder seasons in Tahoe are really special.
Well, you know, September is the magic month.
I believe so. Absolutely.
I mean, it is the magic month just about everywhere in the world.
Well, in Tahoe, you know, we have this big, beautiful lake that's great to go swimming in. It warms up into the 70s eventually in July and August. It's actually the warmest in September. So you can still do all the boating activities. You can go kayaking, paddleboarding, swimming, wake surfing. And then you can do some beautiful hikes because it's not so blazing hot in the fall as it is in the summer. And the leaves start changing and the aspen turn this beautiful golden. It's a great time to be here.
Does the lake ever freeze?
The lake never freezes. It's more than 1,600 feet deep. So it's just too deep. The water is constantly cycling around. We do have Emerald Bay, which is this beautiful little bay.
We were over there. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The tea house over
yes,
there.
Yes, isn't that neat?
Oh my God.
Fanette Island.
This little island in the middle of the bay that this woman built this little tea house to go have her afternoon tea. It's still there.
It's absolutely magical. So in the winter, Emerald Bay will freeze. Last winter, we had such a crazy, long, snowy winter, and Emerald Bay froze last winter.
Wow. So for people coming to Tahoe for the first time, that you know are coming maybe to visit you, what's the thing that surprises them the most?
I think the grandeur. I think the size of that giant big blue lake surrounded by the beautiful mountains.
But then again, you've got to manage it all.
Yes.
And that deals with power, that deals with sustainability, that deals with waste treatment, it deals with runoff. How do you do all that?
Well, not alone, that's for sure. I mean, there are more than 80 different organizations that work every day hand in hand to help take care of Tahoe. It is a beautiful place. People come here because of its natural beauty, but it takes a lot of work to maintain that.
And what would you say is your biggest challenge?
Biggest challenge, I think number one is probably forest health. You know, we're surrounded by 24 million trees. We funded some new technology to help count how many trees are in the basin. So now we know there's 24 million, but we're only...
Somebody actually counted.
Well, using LIDAR and AI, the computer counted them. And what we know is we have about 22 million too many trees in Tahoe. So the risk of wildfire is real. And so we're working really hard to reduce the number of trees in the forest to reduce that threat of catastrophic wildfire.
And how do you do that responsibly?
Oh, well, with a lot of environmental permitting and planning. I like to use the term that there are too many trees in the forest, there's too many straws in the cup, and that if we don't reduce some of the trees, we may lose all of the trees. So we have to very carefully plan and thin the forest a bit to have fewer trees, which makes for great hiking, great mountain biking, and if you come in the winter, makes for great tree skiing.
It's one thing to build bike trails, right? It's one thing to figure out how you power new buildings, right? But do you get to a point where you get to a point of diminished returns?
I don't think so, no. I mean, I think what we found, so the Tahoe Fund is a nonprofit. Our whole focus is encouraging the private community to help support great projects through philanthropy. You know, we've raised over $20 million from the private community for more than 130 different projects. People are just love this lake and they are fired up to help it.
Okay, what's the one project you're working on now that's completely psyching you up?
Oh gosh, we have a lot. I think there's a beautiful set of boardwalks up off Mount Rose Highway in the Tahoe Meadows, so maybe 25 minutes north of where we are at Edgewood right now. And they were built to protect the watershed beneath, you know, so when people were walking, they weren't trampling a watershed. Unfortunately, stairs were built leading down to those boardwalks. And so we are working right now, a donor stepped up with a $75,000 matching campaign to say, okay, let's build ramps down so that anybody who comes to visit Lake Tahoe, regardless of ability, can get out on those ramps. So that's a great example of expanding access and inclusivity all around the lake.
And what about the rest of the lake? How accessible is it?
You know, there are parts that are some accessible and we're just trying to make it more. You know, our goal is to get that path that you rode with me and 5 years ago all the way around the lake someday.
You know what the most dangerous thing about that path is? The views are so spectacular. If you don't pay attention, you're going to fall over.
That's kind of all of Lake Tahoe, right? And, yeah. And we see that same thing with people driving around the lake. So one of our goals is to try to get people out of their cars.
How do you do that?
Well, something like microtransit. So if you come and stay at Edgewood, for example, you can call up a service, an app on your phone, and a little shuttle bus will come and pick you up and take you exactly where you want to go in South Lake Tahoe.
So for free?
For free. So if you want to go to the new
event. I'm out of the car right now.
That's it. If you want to go to the new event center, if you want to go to a trailhead, if you want to go to a different restaurant or bar for the evening, you can leave your car behind. And then new paths. So if we have paths that are connecting everything, people never have to get back in their cars. They can bring a bike or rent a bike and bike around town, bike to the beach.
In a given day, how much are you biking?
That's a good question. Just depends. Sometimes I go mountain biking, you know, 10, 15 miles, and sometimes I'm just cruising around town. It's 6 miles. It's a great way to get around town. It's way faster than driving, for sure.
Now, with all the other things you're doing, are you also working to limit growth?
You know, there have been growth restrictions in place since the 1970s when the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency came into being. You know, before that, Tahoe was kind of this newfound place and everybody just built things. It was after the 1960 Olympics. But there have been...
The Winter Olympics.
Winter Olympics. Yeah, there have been growth restrictions in place for a long time. What we're really focused on right now is not necessarily building expanded capacity, but taking old things that are a little bit run down and redeveloping them. Because that has a good impact, not just on the accommodations that are available for people to stay, but it's actually a huge improvement to Lake Clarity. When you have old, rundown, crappy buildings and hotels, they're actually helping fuel more pollutants into the lake. If we can renovate all of those buildings and make them nicer, they'll actually do huge environmental improvements that weren't around when they were built in the 60s, and that will help with Lake Clarity as well.
When somebody builds a house, if they're allowed to, or the houses that were built, what about the sewer system? Is it a sewer system? Is it a septic tank?
It's a sewer system. So something really unique to Lake Tahoe is that all of the sewage in Tahoe actually leaves the basin. There was a time back in the day where the sewage was going into Lake Tahoe.
Ooh.
And Dr. Charles Goldman, really the godfather of clarity in Tahoe, he sounded the alarm back in the 70s and said, this is going to ruin this clarity. And so every system actually goes up and over the hill and out of the basin and gets managed somewhere else.
Wow. So if you're living over the hill, you have a present for them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there are proper sewage systems
I know,
that they're
I know.
Going to. Yeah.
But it's just a nice euphemism. Where did my go, oh, it went over the hill.
Over the hill, yeah, exactly. You don't want it going in the lake. I mean, we have one of the clearest lakes in the world, one of the deepest lakes in the world, and it that blue lake, when you see it, it just changes you. I wonder, you know, you've been here enough. I'm sure it's changed you as well. So we have to do everything we can to ensure that we're not just protecting that lake clarity, but we're improving the lake clarity.
Well, the way it changed me was I still couldn't get my arms around how deep it was.
It's incredible. You can put the Empire State Building in Lake Tahoe and not see the top of it. You can, if you could pick up Lake Tahoe and dump it over into California, it would fill up the entire state with 14 inches of water. It's massive.
Wait, stop. Now I really can't get my arms around that one. That's how much water there is?
There's 39 trillion gallons of water in Lake Tahoe.
Wow.
And it's entirely clear. You know, it comes from the runoff from all the snow on the mountains. And that's actually where all our drinking water comes from. So one thing we always tell people when you come to Tahoe, please don't stop at Costco on the way and pick up cases of plastic water bottles. We have the best tasting drinking tap water in the world. And so when you come here, Edgewood does a great job. They'll give you a reusable water bottle and you just want to fill up. And the slogan is drink Tahoe tap.
Nice. Nice. How many gallons of water?
39 trillion gallons of water.
Wow, so you don't want any spillage.
Right, exactly. And I don't know if you heard about this. One really exciting project was the scuba divers that cleaned up all the trash. 72 miles they swam around the entire lake to pick up the trash.
We're talking to them a little bit later in the show.
Oh, you are? Great, because they started and ended right here at Edgewood. It's pretty exciting. 25,000 pounds of trash.
So, and that's the stuff they were able to see.
Right, and we just funded a deep water ROV, I want to say unmanned ROV, that is going to go to the depths of the lake, all the way down to 1,600 feet, and it has claws on it, and so if it sees tires or other objects, it'll actually be able to deploy the claw, pick up that item. It's hooked up to a crane on the ship above, and they'll be able to remove things deeper than the divers.
So we'll find a couple of dead Mafia Dons.
I don't know, Fredo might still be out there.
It was you. My thanks to Amy, to Joe, and to David Neilman. And my thanks to you for listening to this Ion Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, you know what to do. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Ion Travel Podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Ion Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Ion Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. Okay. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on Wondery Plus.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.